Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, the man mourning the end of the Marc Gasol era in the NBA. It's John Hollinger, our dear friend from over at The Athletic, the senior writer who writes about literally everything that happens in the NBA, I feel like. John, how you doing, man?
Good morning, mate. I'm doing great. I'm not 100% sure that this is the absolute end. I guess we'll see what happens. He's definitely going to be chilling in Spain for a while, though.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I think that Mark had an underrated year last year with Los Angeles. Like, I didn't
understand. Certainly the Lakers underrated it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I didn't understand why they didn't play him more. Maybe Mark's body didn't allow for him to play more. I don't necessarily have an answer there. Maybe there's something I'm missing. And look, I think that, like, he certainly is something of a defensive question mark at this point, just in regard to mobility. But he is so good offensively, just due to decision-making and shooting, that there's still a role for him if he wants it. It's just is, you know, a minimum contract worth it for Mark at this point, given how much money he's made and given his legacy.
Yeah, no, I think the most logical thing for him to do is, you know, hang out for now, grow some awesome vegetables, maybe work out with Pau in Barcelona, you know, run his, you know, he's got his own team that he's putting together in Girona, and stay in shape. And then, you know, what a lot of these veterans do now, I mean, JJ Redick's doing the same thing, right? Is like, I'm not going to sign anything now. Let me see how things are going in January and see if I can latch on to a contender in a role. And then I'll come out of my shell.
Yeah, I kind of love that move. I think that's really, really smart for Gasol. And if it is the end, I hope that he gets the recognition that he deserves. I mean, like, you know, proverbial gun to your head. Is Marc Gasol a Hall of Famer?
So let's acknowledge that I'm extremely biased on this. I think probably yes. I mean, he was a first-team All-NBA player. Pretty important international contributions for Spain. Defensive player of the year, multiple all-star. I would say that's a resume that doesn't make you a shoe-in, but probably makes you more likely than not to get in.
Yeah, two all-NBA selections, like you said, a defensive player of the year award. Funny quirk was that he was second-team all-defense in the year that he won the defensive player of the year award, which was bizarre in many ways. Three-time NBA all-star, obviously won a title in 2019 as a starting center with the Toronto Raptors. And like John said, just incredible international contributions to the NBA. Also, I mean, just unbelievable hair when he was playing with Girona. If you go to his Wikipedia page, just phenomenal flow on his hair, which has to be respected, I think, in some ways for his Hall of Fame case. So,
or envied in my case.
John, I'm right behind you on that.
Milk it while you got it, man.
I'm hanging on, but it's not.
Get that mohawk right now, because in a couple years, it's over, baby.
Oh, man. It's funny. Like, my dad has had thinning hair for, like, the last 30 years that has just kind of stayed the same and just continued to, like, thin out. I'm hoping for that graceful transition, but I don't know, man. It feels like it's going pretty quick. It feels like it's going to end for me in a hurry, and I'll be on that bald bandwagon with you soon. Shaved or bald? Is that what we're going with in your case, John?
Well, I can. Yeah, I mean, it's basically bald. Yeah, I mean, you can, you know, you can say, "Oh, I shaved it," so you can't tell. But like, yeah, there's nothing there.
Yeah, I'm going to be right there with you. But this is not a Marc Gasol retrospective podcast, as much as I'm sure you would enjoy that. This is a Ben Simmons podcast. We are going to kind of break down everything that has to do with what is going on with Ben Simmons in Philadelphia, because it is by far the biggest domino that is still left to fall before this upcoming NBA season. I think that that's absolutely correct, right, John?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, because you know, people thought maybe there'd be a Lillard domino or a Beal domino. There's just not. And that domino may come into play as the season goes on, especially if those teams disappoint. But right now, it's just not something that's in play.
Yeah, that's the impression I get as well. And certainly all of the public posturing says that, I think is fair to say, from Tommy Shepard and Neil Olshey. So Ben is the biggest player left on the board. And I think in some ways that helps Philadelphia. And I think in some ways it makes it less likely that that an easy trade comes to the fore, given that Daryl Morey is involved here and that Daryl is someone who will certainly hold out for the best deal. But before we kind of get into the machinations of what is Ben Simmons' overall value, I think it's just worth defining what Ben Simmons is as a player at this point. And it's a obviously very tricky conversation. He is one of the, let's say, five best defenders in the NBA, maybe one of the best two to three best defenders in the NBA. I kind of think that I've kind of said this for a little while. I talked about it on the podcast last year with Derek Bodner. I thought that Joel Embiid, when he was on the court, was Philadelphia's best defensive player last year. I thought that he was certainly their most important. He protects the rim in such a ridiculous way. He's one of the few guys that can actually completely shut down the paint when playing a drop coverage scheme. Where do you kind of fall on the Joel versus Ben, you know, defensive value thing? Because I think they're very complementary and they certainly help each other's value. But I kind of just think that Joel's ability on the interior is more valuable than what Ben brings.
I mean, it sort of depends on, I mean, it's so situational, right? Because you're asking them to do completely different things. And it depends on who the opponent is too. Because if you're playing against an opponent who is must switch, then you much rather have Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. But if you can play Joel Embiid in a drop, yeah. I mean, he's going to be awesome. So, and having that guy who can just eliminate the paint or come close to it at least, yeah, then he does have more value. So pardon my non-answer here, but it's so situational between them. And I think it's a hard thing. I mean, the one thing we see with Ben Simmons is that the playoffs, right, they increase his defensive value, but man, do they truck his offensive value.
So, yeah, let's talk about Ben in the regular season first and then in the playoffs. So in the regular season, Ben is something like a top five defender in the NBA. He has made an all-NBA team on the third team in 2020. Obviously, he's made the all-defense team each of the last 2 years. He is a really exceptional player creating threes for his teammates, either by grabbing and going out in transition or by playing as like a pseudo lead guard and driving and forcing the defense to collapse and then hitting kick out guys like Tobias Harris and Seth Curry for open threes. He is someone that when he decides to shoot at the rim is an effective finisher at the basket because he has incredible body control at 6'10". Although I do think that there is something happening over the last couple years where it feels like because of the foul shooting issues, he is a little bit more concerned to drive all the way to the rim. It's almost like a bigger, taller, more defensively valuable Rajon Rondo with the Celtics is almost where I'm at with Ben Simmons. Where do you kind of fall on where the Simmons
he's actually is? Even different than Rondo because he won't shoot a three at all, you know? And I almost see him as a guy you use as like the thing that you can't do in Philadelphia that you could potentially do with him someplace else is use him as like a bastard five and play four shooters around him and play him almost the way Milwaukee plays with Giannis. And he's not as good as Giannis, don't get me wrong, but he could do some of those things. I think it'd be really, dangerous as a roller, right?
Yeah.
If and there was
seen,
a
we've seen flashes of that too.
Yeah.
In Philadelphia when Joel is out.
But now, if you're going to play a big plotting center all 48 minutes, which Philadelphia basically did last year, and it's apparently committed to doing again this year because they have Embiid and Drummond, hashtag free Paul Reed, and so I think that limits his ability to do that and be kind of the best version of that player. So if you had we'll bring him up again. If you had Marc Gasol from 5 years ago, and you could play him with Ben Simmons, like, that's the perfect five to play with him, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny. One of the landing spots we'll talk about is Minnesota, potentially. And I think that Karl Towns is, like, the absolute perfect center to play with Ben Simmons. But
yes.
Talking about Ben Simmons at the five, like the pseudo four, it's a difficult conversation because how much of it comes down to, is Ben willing to do that? Like, how much is Ben willing to play as a five man versus as the point guard or versus as, like, the secondary ball handler? Because I agree with you. I think that we've seen enough in the limited moments where Ben has played as a screener that make me go, oh, this could be, like, Draymond Green level ridiculous in the short role. Like, if you play him with a real point guard and you have him go up, you set a screen, you short roll him to, like, that 18-foot range, and he gets to take advantage of potential 4-on-3 situations. Those advantages for someone like Ben Simmons, who's just, like, a basketball savant in, like, a pretty real way, I think that kind of goes underrated a little bit with Ben. His ability to process what's happening on the court and his ability to react to it in such a quick way, it's really remarkable. The problem is that the skill side has now caught up to it. Like, he's an incredible athlete. He has incredible feel for the game. He has incredible reaction time, incredible basketball IQ, everything with that. But now the skill side just is caught up. And when you can't shoot in today's NBA, you just can't be on the ball as much as Ben Simmons is. And that's where it gets complicated for me. Like, if Ben is willing to play the four or the five, please, by all means, like, trade for him and trade a lot for him, because I think he still has, like, top 10 player potential if he's willing to do that.
Yeah, I think he's a guy you play kind of part on the ball, part off the ball. And, you know, when you get into fourth quarters, using him as an off-ball player, you know, it's putting him in a screen and roll and opening the rest of the court is better than putting him in a role where he's just running away and hiding, because you have Embiid in the middle and in the post and you're trying to space for him, and that just leaves no area for Simmons.
It's so frustrating to me, because what did you think of Ben coming into the NBA? Because I really thought that, and even through his, I would say his third year, I still felt really good that he was going to be a top 10 player in the NBA at some point, that the light would come on and that he would absolutely dominate games.
You just figure the trajectory on a lot of these guys is that they add enough shooting to at least be somewhat viable, and then the rest of their athleticism and reading the game or whatever takes over. You know, it's like Dwayne Wade. Did he ever really become a three-point shooter? No, but, like, there was enough of it there where, like, okay, you at least had to deal with it a little bit. And you just sort of expected that trajectory with him, too, and it just never happened. I mean, coming into his draft year,
here's the thing with Wade too. Like, from 10 to 16 or 10 to 23 feet last year in the mid-range, Ben Simmons took 44 shots last year and shot, like, 39%. Dwayne Wade was always a self-creating, like, mid-range killer, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
at least get to that shot whenever he wants. Like, Ben can't do that.
Yeah, that's very true.
So it's, if he can't be a self-creating shooter and scorer, and that, to me, like, I blame him for that. Like, I'm now at the point officially where it's just like, this is on you. If you can't figure out that you have to become at least a passable shooter it's kind of on you, right? Like you need to understand at this point, you are 25 years old. Like, you need to understand that your shooting is maybe the biggest swing skill in the NBA for a title contender in Philadelphia, right?
Oh, yeah. 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 I think that's accurate.
Like, if he could actually shoot a corner three and then could open up the court, like, he could shoot 35% from a corner, 38% from a corner. It completely changes what Philadelphia does. Completely.
He doesn't even need to shoot that well. Like, he just needs to be a sort of threat. Like, you just disregard him so completely right now.
And then on top of it now, he just doesn't seem to have the confidence to attack. I mean, the play where he kicked it to Matisse Thybulle after being by himself under the basket with Trae Young rotating from the weak side, like, that got all of the publicity, but that's like the absolute prime example of, like, the worst case scenario of what Ben Simmons has become in terms of confidence around the rim. But he has been kind of on that road for a little while where he's been less confident going to the basket, and it's frustrating and it's tough. And he brings so much to the table as a passer, as a playmaker, as a transition driver. Like, I think that probably is an underrated aspect as well. A team like Philadelphia that has someone like Joel Embiid, having someone like Ben next to him who drives transition play and can get up and down the court quickly, I think that that actually has the effect at times of being able to kind of let Joel sit back on defense, not have to run the court for an offensive possession, get like a little bit of like a passive or active rest, I guess, on the court.
Yeah.
For those extra like little 6 or 7 seconds where Ben is driving and scoring, or Ben is driving and kicking out to an open 3-point shooter and then they make it and then the other team brings the ball up the court. Like, those, stealing those little moments, I think really, really helps in a game for Philadelphia. And losing that is going to be harmful for Philly. I think it's going to be harmful for their offense. And obviously losing that is going to be harmful. Losing Ben is going to be harmful to their defense. But I just don't have confidence in where Ben's trajectory is going in a way that I did 18 months ago.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I'm not swayed by like 2 Instagram clips of him making jump shots. But I think it's just to the point where he needs a change of scenery.
Do you remember the Willie Cauley-Stein can shoot pre-draft videos?
Ooh, you know, I don't, because it's weird when you're on the team side, when you know a player has no chance of getting to you, you just expend very little effort on that player in the pre-draft process. And it was kind of the same way with us with Ben Simmons too. Like, once we saw enough of him to determine that we had no chance to be in a position to pick him, then, you know, you kind of move on to the things that are more possible. So I missed out on that era, unfortunately.
Yeah, the Willie Cauley-Stein one is always fun to me, because he would like show up to these pre-draft workouts and people get video of him shooting threes, and it's like, oh wait, it takes him like 4 seconds to load into every 3-point shot. There's no way this is actually going to work. But then he makes them, so people are just like, oh yeah, he can. He's developing a jump shot. He's still only 21. Yeah. It's like, what are we
doing? Then the video is cut after every one, and he's standing in a different spot. Right.
Oh, those are the best.
One of those drills.
Now that you're on the media side, how much has your consumption of the pre-draft internet video consumerism changed?
I didn't know how to regard them before, and now I feel a lot more comfortable just totally disregarding them, I guess.
Yes. Strong agree. Very strong agree. Let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back with more on just kind of where we are on Ben Simmons. let's talk about a different kind of performance than what we're talking about with the NCAA tournament. They want to help your performance in the bedroom. Joy mode, you know, just like on the basketball court, sometimes you might have an off night. Maybe you're playing okay and you want to take your game up a level even. That's where joy mode is going to come in. Don't grab some over-the-counter pills that you see at a gas station. They're going to often contain unregulated chemicals, suggest unsafe doses, carry the risk of several other health problems down the road. That's why we've partnered with Joy Mode. Whether you're looking to spice up your intimate moments or increase your confidence in the bedroom, Joy Mode makes all natural and science-backed supplements dedicated to helping men perform better across their core functions. Their trademark product, the Sexual Performance Booster, is every man's solution for increased performance. It's like a pre-workout, but for sex. And get this, all ingredients have been assessed in peer-reviewed journals and researched in humans. Imagine this, it comes in a palm-sized packet, like your favorite electrolyte powder. Just simply mix it with 6 to 8 ounces of water 45 minutes before sexual activity begins, and you're going to watch the magic unfold. Redefine your intimacy and go to use joymode.com for 20% off with code GAMETHEORY. That's GAMETHEORY. That's 20% off and free shipping with code GAMETHEORY. Not only is this the only supplement you'll need in the bedroom, but it also supports blood vessel support, cardiovascular and heart health, athletic performance, blood pressure, and general erection function. So why settle for anything less? Whether you're happy or unhappy with your performance in the bedroom, why not perform even better with Joy Mode? Okay, we're back. So Ben Simmons, I would say, is something like, just given all of the defensive value that he brings to the table, given the transition driving ability, given the passing ability, I would say he is still a top 30 player in the NBA. I think I would be comfortable saying 30. Where do you kind of sit with him in the hierarchy of players?
I would say that's probably about right. I would say he has more regular season value than playoff value. Which, I mean, for some teams, that's actually the thing that matters more. You know, if you're just fighting to get into the playoffs, yeah, Ben Simmons can really help you do that. He might disappoint you a little once you actually get there, but, you know, getting there is half the battle.
And I think that there is a case, and we'll talk about that depending on the situation, that Ben could be good in the right playoff situation. It's just that's not Philadelphia, given the presence of Joel Embiid at this point. So what is Ben Simmons' trade value, in your opinion? Because we've heard Daryl Morey come out and talk about looking for Daryl Morey hasn't come out, but reports about Daryl have come out. I shouldn't characterize it as being from Daryl. Reports about what Daryl Morey is looking for have come out and said that he wants like 4 first round picks and wants a player, like he wants the world for Ben Simmons. Do we think that there is a chance that he could get the kind of value that he is searching for?
No. And I mean, just knowing how the Rockets operated when he was there, like, I'm not surprised by this because their history is they do end up making a ton of trades, but they a lot of times will start at something really out there and then slowly reel themselves back in. And so I think that's what they started at here, is just ask for the moon, go fishing for suckers, see if there's any out there. And then I think once reality hits that isn't happening, now comes the real challenge. I think also one of the reasons they felt like they could do that is because they thought Lillard might come available at some point.
Right.
You know, so they were just, you know, it was almost a stalling for time tactic. And now that isn't available to them, and we're a lot closer to the season, and there's more threat that, you know, Simmons is talking about actually not showing up for camp, which, you know, the Sixers can win enough regular season games probably, you know, as long as Embiid's healthy, that it's not a massive deal for them. But it's just, it gets so much harder to do trades once the season starts, especially if teams have to piece together like four contracts, because now you talk about you have to cut people, you can only have 15 on the active roster. Like, it just becomes much more of a challenge. So I do think this is business they want done, not necessarily by the time camp starts, although that I think that would be helpful for them, but certainly by the time the regular season, certainly by the time the roster cutdown happens.
Yeah, it feels that way to me as well. I guess that, like, there's been reporting from ESPN, I think Brian Windhorst, I saw a video of it, with him saying that, like, Sixers management with Josh Harris flew to the, like, Los Angeles area where Simmons is and met with Simmons and Rich Paul and some of the other parties, you know, involved in this. And basically they were hoping that Ben would be willing to report to training camp in order to help facilitate this thing. And Ben was just like, it's not my job to, like, help raise my trade value at this point. When you hear something like that as a former, you know, NBA executive, I mean, what are your thoughts on just the Ben Simmons, it's not my job to raise my trade value?
Yes, like, well, you could... It is and it isn't. I mean, once the off season happens, yeah, that's technically true, but there's a part of you that's like, well, you could have you could have done a little bit more to raise your trade value when the games were happening, but you know, bygones, I guess. I understand where he's coming from a little bit. Like, it actually helps his next team more if his trade value is low. So, like, you know, other than the fact that he wants to be out of there, like, whatever gets him out of there with the least amount going to back to the Sixers is actually the most helpful thing for him. So his incentives are actually very different than the Sixers.
Yeah, I think that that's always really important in these conversations. And to be honest, like, I kind of agree with Ben. Like, it is not his job to raise his own trade value at the end of the day. Like, he could have done more during the season. I totally agree with you there. But, like, look, these games aren't happening. I don't think that, or I think that most NBA executives are much like you and I in saying, no matter how many Ben Simmons jump shot videos from training come out, like, nobody's going to believe it until they see it.
Yeah, totally.
Like, no one's going to be like, oh my God, Ben just made 10 straight threes in a workout. We have to believe in his jump shot going forward. So I think that's reasonable. And I think that Ben kind of made that case more in regard to, if I report to training camp and play for a couple of games, like in the regular season, like, could that help my trade value? Look, I think that this is going to be the second podcast where I reference this, but I think a Gwyneth Paltrow, Chris Martin style conscious uncoupling is probably the best move going forward for this pairing, right?
Who gets Apple?
Who is the Apple in this circumstance? Is it Tyrese Maxey, given the
Yes.
let's move to actual offers.
Sure.
Who do you think has the best offer on the table right now, in your opinion? Not in terms of what the actual offer is, because we don't know for sure what the actual offers are necessarily, but in the, you know, when building an offer, what offer makes the most sense to you?
I think the thing for Philly is that if you can't get Lillard, can you get the pieces that let you get Lillard later? And can you get those pieces without submarining the team you have now? And I wonder, because of that, if Sacramento is going to be the best one, where you could do something with Hield, Bagley, and multiple firsts, and they're Sacramento firsts, so they're probably pretty tasty. And, like, Buddy Hield fits in Philly, right?
Really well. Really, really well.
And Bagley, I think, is still kind of interesting if you're a rebuilding team. which the Blazers would be the second they did a Lillard deal. So I think that part is an interesting one. So there's that.
Let's talk about the Sacramento thing first, because I don't think that's an interesting offer at all for Ben.
Okay.
And I think it's mostly because I think Marvin Bagley at this point is like Sekou Doumbouya level, like salary ballast in a trade. Like, I'm just not really interested in Marvin Bagley.
You would have to have a level of belief in Bagley that is not supported by his recent performance, let's say.
I get that he was the number two overall pick, but like we've seen it for 3 years now. He might be one of the 10 worst defenders in the NBA. Certainly among bigs, he's one of the 10 worst defenders in the NBA. I just can't. I can't quite get there with Bagley. The Kings picks idea, I think, is very true. But like, I think I would need Davion Mitchell.
Yeah, I was going to say, how much does Mitchell sweeten the pot? That would be one.
I would need Mitchell in a deal for Ben Simmons. And I would need it to be like Mitchell healed. You'd have to throw in Bagley and like multiple firsts. Like there's just no, like I just don't.
Yeah. You could actually throw in Tristan Thompson instead of Bagley if you wanted.
I don't. I don't. I'm sure Rich Paul would be real happy about that too, getting one client or getting at least one client out of Philly and sending one back that way. That'd be great for him. The one that stood out to me the whole time was Minnesota, but I think that your point about making the move that makes you still in the ballpark for Lillard makes a Minnesota deal less interesting. And I think it's actually something I really agree with you on, that making the deal that makes it possible to stay in the game for Lillard is the most important move now. And I don't know if Minnesota doing something like Malik Beasley, D'Angelo Russell, Jaden McDaniels in like a couple of firsts. Like, I don't know if that keeps them in the game for Lillard.
Yeah, and it makes them really expensive too. You know, you'd almost rather not have Russell in the deal. Because I don't know how Russell, like, does Russell really help you in a Lillard trade?
No, I don't think he helps you at all in a Lillard deal.
Unless they're delusional and think, we're still going to win, we're not tanking, you know.
Which, like, don't put it past Neil Olshey, I don't think. That, like, that could be his thing. I mean, there has never been a point, I feel like, where he has really actively tried to dismantle it, but then again...
But there was when they reset after LaMarcus left and Wes Matthews tore his Achilles, and they did actually reset, and they just did it quickly enough that they ended up making the playoffs even though they didn't expect to.
So I don't
see a like delusional fake rebuild type scenario happening there. I think if a Lillard deal happens, they're busting out the dynamite.
I would hope so, especially given that like Nurkic has 1 year left on that deal. You know, CJ McCollum would still have value league wide, I think, at the very least. I would just hope that they do blow it up. So you would almost rather go, would you rather have Beverly in that deal than Russell?
Yeah, I mean, you could put Beverly or Prince as your salary ballast with Beasley and McDaniels, right? And you get to the number you need to.
Right. That's still probably not enough, isn't it?
You need those T-Wolves first and just counting on the T-Wolves T-Wolving things up and adding value to your first that way.
The thing that would worry me about the T-Wolves just like T-Wolvesing things up is that I think that team would actually be really good if they had Ben Simmons, because he's the perfect piece.
Totally. You end up with Edwards, Towns, Russell, and Beasley, that's pretty good, because Yeah. They're shooting around him. His defense helps, you know, the fact that nobody else there plays any defense. And, you know, you just need one or two other things at that point, and you're pretty good.
Yeah, like the Ben Simmons as like a connective piece between Anthony Edwards and Karl Towns. Like, you could run like 4-5 or 5-4 ball screening action with Towns and Simmons. You could run like Towns as a wing floor spacer for like Edwards Simmons screening actions. Like, there are just so many different ways to run that offense at that point. Plus, you would get the perfect complement for Karl Anthony Towns defensively at that point. I mean, that's a Minnesota. I understand why it seems like they're trying to pull out all the stops to get Ben Simmons, because that is the player that is on the market right now that I think they should be chasing.
Yeah.
Is there like, who are the other teams that you see as like pretty interesting here?
You know, could Indiana get in this?
I've been kind of sneaky wondering about them for a little while.
Because they kind of need to do something different. The only thing is, like, you're probably looking at Turner or Sabonis being in it, and what the hell is Philadelphia going to do with those guys? I mean, I guess Turner theoretically fits there a little better. Could you play Turner and Embiid together?
I don't think that they have enough mobility to make that work.
Yeah.
But I think it would be pretty easy to move Turner or Sabonis.
Yeah, you can flip one, but you'd have to make it a three-way trade, which is right where trades go to die. But in this case, you have an interesting enough player that I think you have a more plausible chance of pulling it off.
Yeah, I was going to say, three-team deals go to die whenever the player that you're offering to a third team sucks. Miles Turner, yeah. Domantas Sabonis is actually good enough to where it's like, if we're the third team, it'd be like the Jared Allen thing with the Cavs coming in, right?
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah,
like, this is great. Like, let's do this. Let's move 2 first round picks for Turner if he's willing to agree to an extension or something like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're Indiana, you do Turner and Lamb, you do Duarte, who's good enough to help them right now. And that's how you get your money, right? And then you just throw future firsts on top of that. You have to be very careful on the salaries, I guess, because Indiana's so close to the tax, so that gets a little tricky. And there ain't no way in hell Indiana's paying luxury tax, right?
Well, I feel like it'd be like, because there were those rumors about Brogdon earlier this summer that they might be looking
to. There was a lot of Brogdon smoke, yeah. But the thing is, you want Simmons to play with Brogdon, don't you? You don't want Simmons to be just like your the thing that they tried to make him isn't quite the thing he really ought to be. Like, you almost want to start Brogdon, LeVert, Warren, and Simmons. Maybe Holiday instead of LeVert, and LeVert's your sixth man, whatever. But like, you want perimeter options around Simmons. That's the thing that's going to make him effective, right? Actually, as I think about this, yeah, and you actually want Sabonis in the trade and not Turner for the same reason. Like, you want that shooting to be around Simmons, and that's the thing that's going to make him effective.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Is, to me, it's more of a Sabonis move than a Turner move, but I just don't know how. Like, it feels like they're pretty committed to Sabonis, right?
Yeah, but, you know, then they'd be, I think they'd be more committed to Simmons, maybe. I don't know. Do you think? I don't know.
Well, it's funny because, like, Domantas Sabonis made the All-Star game this year. I personally would rather have been than Domantas Sabonis. I understand the case that Indiana fans would make. But, yeah, I think I would just rather have Ben than Sabonis. I don't know that I would move Sabonis like plus 3 other things for Ben.
Yeah, that's where it gets tricky is the asset piece of it, right?
Yeah, I think so. I've been like trying to come up, like, I've seen Cleveland. I think Mark Stein threw out the Cavs is an interesting one. I'm just like not sure where that works for anyone.
How does this work for Cleveland? Because the problem is their lottery picks the last 3 years haven't established any value yet, right?
I think Garland's really good, and I think Garland is a really good fit in Philly, but I also don't think that a third-year point guard is helping Philly win now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's not a lot of value there for Sixers, and at the end of the day, in a trade that follows that, whatever team that is, like let's say the Lillard scenario again, if you're Philly, you'd rather have the draft pick than Darius Garland, right? You'd rather be able to move that thing than to have the player. I mean, Okoro hasn't really established value. Sexton has had his moments, but is he a Doritos guy, or is he really adding value on a good team? I think that's still a very open question. So, like, where is the trade other than their draft picks? Which I think there would be a lot of interest in Cleveland draft picks, but I don't think they're going to put Mobley in something like this, right?
No, yeah, no chance.
I'm sure they're hoping to use Kevin Love as a salary match. Good luck with that. There's a lot of complications. Like, it really, the only player they could realistically put in the deal when you look at like January 15th trade restrictions is Ricky Rubio.
Right. There's no way your old team, Memphis, is like the sleeping giant here, right?
That's an interesting one because they can. I mean, they have to put like 9 players in it for the salary match. But setting that part aside, I mean, I think they're definitely looking at their situation and realizing like they need some way to not stay in the 40-win area, even though they have a lot of good young players. They don't really have the high level guys and enough concentration to get to the next point in the progression. And so that's why you heard a lot of stuff about them with all kinds of different players, because it was just a little bit, I think, of a fishing expedition to determine what guys' value was and what was out there for them to get, because like they have to thin the herd at some point. So, you know, what could they put into a deal? Would they put Jaren Jackson in a deal for Ben Simmons? I mean, that's a really interesting trade right there, right?
I don't think they would. Like, I just don't.
I still think that's unlikely, too.
Doing that. But could they do Desmond Bane, Zaire Williams, DeAnthony Melton, and what gets them to the number?
Yeah, you have to do like 6 other John Conchars and Chris Dunns. Like it gets pretty ugly if you're not doing like Steven Adams, or at the very least like Dylan Brooks is the only other guy who makes more than 10.
Yeah. So you'd have to involve Adams to a third team basically to make it work. And what? He can't be aggregated for a little while still probably, right?
Yeah, they did that. I think it would be October 6th or so.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm off by a little bit here.
Yeah, just like quick math. I mean, yeah. But here's the reason why I like Memphis is what would be my favorite landing spot. I don't think it's going to happen. Like, it just doesn't feel like the way that Memphis wants to build their roster, but the question would be, like, does Ben Simmons fit with Ja Morant, given that Ja Morant just doesn't really shoot yet, right? I think that they're kind of screwed if Ja Morant doesn't shoot long term anyway. So you might as well bank on the development of Ja Morant being able to shoot and being able to develop as that scoring threat and get the pieces around him that work once he does develop that, right? In a Ben Simmons, Jaren Jackson front court long term sounds fucking terrifying to me. Like that sounds, if they can both stay healthy, that sounds like the exact perfect front court to play with Ja Morant, to play an up-tempo style of basketball. Jaren would obviously really help Ben in regard to the shooting side of floor spacing and opening up the court for Ben. They really run a ton of like screen actions even for Jaren Jackson. Like they'll run like pin downs and shit for him that would really open up the court for Ben.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me is like if I was building the roster I would want to see Ben Simmons with most, it would be this or Minnesota, I think.
Well, I mean, the thing with Ben Simmons with this roster is there's just no shooting anywhere. I mean, it's not just a question of Simmons with Morant.
Yeah.
Like, there's just the whole issue with this team has been the lack of shooting. And now you're talking about...
You're definitely moving, you know, Bane in a deal.
If you're moving Bane in it, like...
To ask for.
Yeah. You're asking Jaren to basically be all the floor spacing. So I think they're, you know, I wonder if Memphis is kind of focused in the opposite direction.
I think they probably
in terms
are
of that.
What it's worth. Like, I don't see that as something that would happen, but I kind of like it if it would happen.
It'd be interesting as hell for sure.
Yeah. I'll just like ask you as a kind of wrapping up thought here.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think the ultimate final landing spot is for Ben Simmons?
I'm going to say Sacramento. There's a Daryl Monty McNair connection. I do think there's an interest in Sacramento in doing something right now to end that 14-year playoff streak. Like, their entire, I mean, for the last several years, really, you know, the entire mindset is similar to Charlotte, right? Can we just get the 8 seed, please? And so I think they're more willing to put some stuff on the table that maybe other teams would be reticent to do. And then I think if you're in a place like that, the fact that Simmons is signed for so long offers you some comfort, you know, that even if the guy demands a trade, you're just like, no, right? Like, you're signed for 4 years. You have no leverage. So,
I think that this move by Simmons, this power move to get out of Philly,
mm-hmm.
will exhaust a lot of his capital to be able to do that within the next 2 years to like ask
yeah,
that again.
Yeah. So the Simmons-Fox partnership is a little tricky, you hope you have enough shooting there to make that work, and you know, can you get enough? You got Rashawn Holmes at 5, so you got an all-process front court there, is that
SS
enough?
West?
Shoot, yeah, you know, is Simmons with Holmes, does that get you enough shooting, or do you have to do more surgery at that point? But I think those are the types of questions that at least like upgrading your talent is your first thing when you're team down there. And I think the type of deal they'd be looking at upgrades their talent.
There's no way that Toronto could do something like a Van Vliet, Malachi Flynn, like 3 first round picks kind of thing.
I think they could. I just don't think that's what they're wired to do. I think they're going to, you know, they're more interested in, like, if they can do something a little more vulture-y than that, you know, where it's like Goran Dragic and 2 firsts or something, you know, where it's like way the hell less than people expected, you know, kind of like the Kawhi trade, right? Like, I think they'd be very interested in that. But otherwise, I think there's only so much they're going to put on the table.
And there's no way that we think this is like a move for Golden State.
I think it's the wrong move for Golden State, yeah.
I agree with you that I think it's actually the wrong move for Golden State. So, I mean, like, look, maybe they get involved. But again, if the move is to stay available for Damian Lillard, if you're Philadelphia, or Bradley Beal, let's say, as well. Let's throw him in the mix.
Yeah.
There isn't really anything I think that Golden State can offer if they're not going to throw in both like Kuminga and Moses Moody and like all of the future first round picks. And I just don't know that they would do that in this
climate
for them. Like, this isn't their move to get back to the top. The last team that was weird to me was San Antonio, just because they're also a team that like really, it feels like could make a consolidation move, but this doesn't feel like a San Antonio move to me.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I have a hard time seeing that one.
And like a lot of their guys are pretty young. Like, it would almost have to be like homecoming for Lonnie Walker, Derek White, and all of the future first round picks. Like, but San Antonio really likes keeping their first round picks if they can. So that doesn't track.
It would be a very out of character trade for them based on the last 20 years.
Yeah. I will say, like, it would probably allow them to keep like some of, you know, Josh Primo and Keldon Johnson and one of their other guards. Like, I would think that you'd almost have to move Devin Vassell, Lonnie Walker, and Derek White, and then, like, a couple of firsts, and then you find the salary ballast somewhere. Maybe the salary ballast is homecoming for Thad Young, too. But, yeah, that just feels like a non-Spurs move, I guess, to me.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
I think you're right. I think that Sacramento is the team that lines up the most with all of this. And I think that it would have to involve them moving off of the stance that Sam Amick reported, who Sam is, I feel like, is plugged in Sacramento and has been for years.
Extremely plugged in, yes.
As anyone in the reporting sphere, that the Kings are not willing to move De'Aaron Fox or Tyrese Halliburton. Did you notice that Davion Mitchell was conspicuous by his absence in that report?
Yeah, that is interesting. I just think, yeah, I mean, if you know that you have to have something fairly juicy out there, and that's probably the juiciest thing they can put on the table. So I guess I'm not completely shocked by that.
Yeah, that felt interesting to me. But I think I'm in on that making the most sense, at least. He'd be a real get for the Kings. He'd really help them. I think they would have to do some real, like, finagling on the margins of that roster, but something like Davion Mitchell, Buddy Hield, multiple first round picks, and then throw in Marvin Bagley, I guess, if you want to throw in Marvin Bagley for salary cap reasons. I don't want to throw in Marvin Bagley. John, do you have any strong takes that you want to get out there before we go?
Yeah, now that it's the fall, don't drink pumpkin spice coffee. It's not good.
John, I've got a secret for you. I used to drink a lot of pumpkin spice coffee, but...
Oh, I'm so sorry.
But
it's the spring for you right now, so this doesn't apply, right?
That's true. And the coffee scene here in Melbourne is unbelievable.
Like, I've heard that.
Absolutely unbelievable. Like, my wife Laura and I did a coffee walk throughout, like, the central business district of Melbourne. It was unbelievable. We did like 5 or 6 stops, like, within the city. I felt like my heart was about to explode after we
drank. Yeah, I was going to ask about that part.
5 or 6 cups of coffee, but it was worth it. It was so good. It was the coffee scene has ruined the pumpkin spice experience for me that exists in the United States. John, I'm glad that you were able to get that off your chest.
Please, well, thank you for providing me a forum for this important information.
It's a public service announcement, really. John, please tell the people where what you have coming up, what you have on the docket.
Well, nobody's really playing any games right now, so I don't have a whole lot right now. I'm working on all my season previews for The Athletic, though, and so once we get toward the end of the month, you're going to see a tsunami of stuff for me previewing the coming season. So just hold tight until then, and then we'll get you fed.
People call me prolific, like, in terms of, like, what I write. I have no idea how you find the time to write the amount of things that you write. Like, you're going to do 30 team previews, and they're going to get released, and I'm just going to be like, how in the entire fuck did he find the time to do this? Like, it's just incredible to me. So in order to get all of the John Hollinger team previews, which are all going to be absolutely incredible, please go subscribe to The Athletic. Shout out to all the sponsors that were on this podcast. We'll be back later next week with some more NBA stuff. Hopefully something happens and I won't have to, like, dive deep into the salary cap machinations of the Marc Gasol trade and the DeAndre Jordan trade and things like that next week with the NBA show. But until next time, we'll talk soon. Bye.